This podcast is brought to you by BrunerAcademy.com, your online resource for the best public speaking, presentation, storytelling skills courses. Become a rockstar communicator in any setting. Visit BrunerAcademy.com.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Live Your Best Life with Liz Bruner. I'm Liz, and my goal with each episode is to share stories of people who are recreating their lives or rising above challenges to write their next chapters with authenticity. These stories give me the courage to go after living my best life, and I think they will do that for you too. If you like this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show, so this podcast can continue to inspire next chapters all over the world. Ever since she can remember, my guest today says she's always been drawn to sparkly things. And what started out as a hobby has now turned into a thriving jewelry business. But there was a point on her journey where she wasn't sure she would even be able to continue making the jewelry she loved because her body was literally attacking itself. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Today, she is living with this disease and offering hope with a special jewelry collection. Jacqueline Lapik, welcome to my podcast. It's so nice to have you on the show today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, first of all, how is your health today? I've got to start there.
That's always one of the hardest questions because with MS, it's so unpredictable and every day can be so different. Overall, I'm doing a lot better than a year ago when I was first diagnosed. I have quite a team. I do a lot of holistic things. I'm on a medication that helps basically to prevent the MS from progressing. So overall, I'm doing a lot better. There's definitely some hard days, but it's okay.
Well, I'm really glad to hear that. And for our listeners who may have heard of MS, but really may not know what it is or what the symptoms are, can you share with us briefly what exactly MS is?
So it's an autoimmune disease. Basically, your immune system is attacking your body, your nervous system. And it eats away. It's called the myelin sheath. It's the area that's around your nerves that protects your nerves. So depending where your immune system is attacking your body will kind of show what symptoms you're going to have. So for me, my lesions, where that sheath has been attacked, it directly correlates to my lower body. So I get a lot of numbness and tingling in my lower body. Some people, it can be in their hands, their arms. It can be blindness.
Unpredictable to what you said a little while ago. Now, you certainly didn't know you had MS. You believed you were totally healthy. But the day before your 33rd birthday, you're treating yourself to a pedicure. And then everything changed. Take us through what happened.
Ironically, right before my birthday, I was really into weightlifting. I felt the strongest and the healthiest that I've ever felt. And as you said, I got one of those fancy pedicures on my birthday where they do all the scrubs and massages. And that night, my feet were so tingly. And I remember saying to my boyfriend, they must have really scrubbed my feet really hard because it was such a weird sensation. And basically, within 1 week, the tingling in my feet went to my whole lower half going numb. Because of my age and how healthy I was, even with all of that, I still was in a bit of denial. I thought my body was just doing some weird fluke thing and it was going to go away. And what finally made me go to the hospital, I took a shower and the water was burning hot. I couldn't touch the water with my hand because it was so hot, but my feet, I couldn't feel it and my feet felt cold. For whatever reason, that was finally, I was like, okay, something's not right. I need to go to the hospital.
Gosh, wasn't there a point also where you dropped a 7-pound dumbbell on your foot and you couldn't feel it?
That was, I believe, the week I got home from the hospital and I had a 7-pound dumbbell and I dropped it on my foot and cried, and not because it hurt, but because I couldn't feel it. And just these little things in life that I never thought ever before this to be grateful for my feet, for my legs. And when these things happen in your life, it really does open your eyes to really be grateful for every single thing. And luckily, a lot of the feeling has come back and it comes and goes. But at the time, I was like, if only I just like appreciated being able to wear heels or sandals, or I wore more comfy socks for my feet and treated them better, and just silly things like that.
So you say that the doctors found lesions on your brain and your spine, I believe. What have they told you is the prognosis of this? Because if it is such an sort of unpredictable illness disease, Everybody's different, I'm guessing. But what is your prognosis, if I may ask?
I was lucky in the sense that my symptoms came on fast and intense. A lot of people that have MS, it can start off with fatigue, dizziness, minor tingling, and it's hard to get a diagnosis. It can be hard for doctors to take it seriously. So for me, it was really extreme. So basically, to diagnose with you with MS, there's a few things that have to show up. The first are the lesions on your brain and or spine, a spinal tap.
In terms of going forward, I mean, because you're on medications and things like that, I'm trusting and hoping that they're optimistic for your health going forward.
The medication I'm on, it's an infusion. It's twice a year. It's 6 hours each time. And it's all preventative. So again, I was lucky in the sense that it was caught pretty quickly and early on. It should hopefully never be worse than it is. I shouldn't get any more lesions. It can happen even on the infusions, but that's the goal. And I do a lot of things on my own between acupuncture, diet, taking really good care of myself. It's a full-time job. At least now I kind of have it under control, but pretty much for a full year, majority of my life was dedicated to figuring this out. And I refused to not be able to walk, to not be able to use my hand. I refused to feel as lousy as I did. So I pretty much have just been working really hard for a year to figure out what helps and what works.
You know, one of the things I think I read, and you talk about the extremes and how lucky you were in that your symptoms were extreme. Weren't you walking down a street and like your shoe fell off and you didn't even know it?
Yes, my feet were really numb. And you know, sometimes like you just have to laugh. Yeah, it was over the summer and I was wearing sandals that didn't have a back. I walked a few blocks and didn't even realize my shoe wasn't on. And I just started laughing because I didn't know what else to do. And then I was like, am I ever going to be able to wear shoes that don't have backs? Will I ever be able to wear heels again? And I went to this really special gala for MS that tries to raise money to find a cure. And I wore these little kid in heels and I was so excited that I could wear heels again.
Yay. It's the little things sometimes, isn't it, Jacqueline? It's the little things. How long had you been in your jewelry business when you got your diagnosis? I'm curious.
I have been in the jewelry industry pretty much my whole professional life. I went to grad school at Parsons in New York for fashion. And then I studied at the Gemology Institute of America. I designed jewelry on the side for a while also working in the industry. So I worked in diamond wholesale for one of the biggest diamond companies in the world. I worked in manufacturing, production. And then I went off on my own about a few years ago, kind of around COVID.
Was there ever a point in time when you got your diagnosis that you thought, oh my gosh, I'm not even going to be able to do this anymore? Was that a big fear for you at some point in time?
That was the first thing that went through my head, especially because I didn't get my diagnosis for a little while. They suspected it was MS, but it took a long time to get the results back from the spinal tap to confirm everything. So I had no idea, was the numbness going to spread through my whole body? Last summer, I had a bit of a relapse and I'm right-handed. My right hand and arm got pretty weak. It's actually kind of been a constant thing, but the first thing in the hospital was, what if I can't use my hand? What if I can't draw? What if I can't sketch? What if I can't make jewelry? Immediately when I was in the hospital, I started to think of a collection that I could make to donate proceeds to an organization that helps with finding a cure for MS. And the collection, it's called HOPE. It's centered around butterflies because when you do the MRI of a brain, it looks like a butterfly. And it has a lot of orange sapphires because the color for MS is orange and there's some diamonds. It's all with 14 karat gold. I donate proceeds to this amazing organization called Race to Erase MS. It's the funding, the donations, it all goes to finding a cure and kind of finding light and darkness and all these kind of difficult times. I have this bigger purpose and my dream now is to see a cure while I'm alive. So I do what I can to give back and to raise money.
I love the fact that during this somewhat dark period of time when you're in the hospital trying to figure out what's going on, and now you learned it's MS, that you came up with this HOPE collection. And I love the symbolism of the butterfly. I was going to ask you about that. So I'm glad you cleared that up for us. So your jewelry business is a few years old and you've loved sparkly things. I remember reading that about you, but you went to school initially to study sociology and marketing. What was your initial plan?
My whole life, like you said, I've loved anything sparkly, rainbow, unicorns. In high school, when I was applying for college, I was really torn about kind of taking the law school route or the fashion route. I want to make a difference and I really wanted to help people. And I obviously ended up going the fashion jewelry route, but undergrad, I studied sociology and I loved it. I focused on criminology. I actually have a published thesis on the death penalty, which does in a way help with marketing and trends, and those types of things. But when I got into Parsons, I applied to both law school, and the only fashion school I applied to is Parsons. That was the only one I wanted to go to. That was it for me. And when I got the letter and the acceptance letter, there was not 1 ounce of doubt to not say yes and take it. And while I was there, I interned at Vogue, and I got to meet at the time kind of every person I looked up to in the industry. And
I was going to say, what did your parents say? Because they're looking at one had law school and then they're looking at fashion. Are you sure this is what you want to do? How did you convince them? How did not where did well, I'm sure they're fine now, but at the time, was that a difficult decision? It doesn't sound like it.
I'm really lucky. My parents were pretty open and just want me to be happy and follow my path. My mom is my biggest support and they just want me to be happy. And it's like anything, if your heart's in it and you work hard, you'll be successful. If you choose something that, who's to say, I don't know if I would have been miserable, but it just, it wasn't where my heart was at if I chose the law school path. And Parsons, I mean, it's if you want to go into design, fashion, fashion marketing, it really is an incredible education.
I don't have to tell you this, but launching any business is never easy. How did you turn what was initially this hobby of making bracelets into a bona fide business? I know people were asking you, where did you get your bracelet? And you say, well, I made it. But how do you go from that to a bona fide business?
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. It took almost a decade to be able to do it. At Parsons, like you said, I was making beaded bracelets. I wanted gemstone bracelets. I felt, why buy them? I can make them. I'm in New York City with some of the best finding stores in the world. And my teachers, my classmates in grad school, they were buying them off my wrist. My parents came to visit me and we're out to dinner. And there's a table of women from visiting from Chicago. And all of them ordered the exact set that I was wearing. I had no plans of having my own business. I honestly didn't know what I wanted to do. Wow. When I was at Parsons, I just wanted to be in fashion. I didn't know I even wanted to go into jewelry then. I took the summer I graduated, I took it off. I made an insane amount of bracelets. I mean, insane. I was up probably till 2 or 3 a.m. for weeks making bracelets. I came up with the name, the logo, and I did that on the side for years. Kind of coincidentally, my professional path started in jewelry. It wasn't intentional. And then I fell in love with it and I learned so much, especially with the diamond wholesale and the production. And kind of as I grew and my aesthetic grew, I decided I wanted to do fine jewelry. That's when I went to GIA to study about stones and diamond identification, being able to appraise them. It kind of just slowly evolved. And it's really cool. The customers who used to buy and still buy my $40, $50 gemstone bracelets, now I'm doing their like 10-year wedding anniversary bands, their engagement rings, their push presents. So it's such a cool feeling to have those same customers that have grown with me. But yeah, a few years ago, I pretty much started from scratch with the fine jewelry. I learned where I source the stones, where I get them manufactured, networking, and it takes a lot.
When you went into fashion and you weren't thinking jewelry, what were you thinking?
I knew deep down I always wanted to go into fashion and I loved everything from like trend spotting, styling, buying, but I knew I didn't want to design clothing. I honestly really had no idea. Parsons was really helpful to kind of narrow it in, but that's kind of also what just so special about life is sometimes you don't know or sometimes you think you know, and then life just takes you one way. And it just makes so much sense that I designed jewelry because of everything that I love and enjoy.
It's jewelry.
Yeah, exactly. And too, like when I was torn between law school or fashion school, the law school route primarily being for me to make a difference and to help people with jewelry in a very different way, but being able, you know, for someone to buy a present for themselves for a promotion or to custom something that has some part of someone in their life that has passed, or to make an engagement ring that someone's one of their, you know, for someone's most special day of their life. And there is so much meaning. And I also really try to give back to different causes that are really dear to me. So there's the Hope Collection. Then I also have another collection called Generation, where I donate proceeds to an organization called the Met Council based in New York. And they help the largest living group of Holocaust survivors. I try to do what I love and to help in my small way that I can.
Where does the inspiration come from for the pieces that you make?
Honestly, everywhere. It can be from traveling. It can be because I want to wear something that I can't find. It could be from sourcing and finding the most beautiful stone that inspired a whole collection. It could be from a meaning, like the Hope collection that stemmed from how can I relate this collection to MS and Hope? So then the butterflies came and the orange came. So kind of all over the place. And I would say my pieces, they're all whimsical, colorful, fun, mixed with classics. So you'll see unicorns, cheeseburgers, studs, hummus mixed with tennis bracelets, classic diamond bands. Everything's made in 14 karat gold for the most part with all precious stones. And I do a lot of custom work too.
What is the biggest lesson, Jacqueline, that you've learned being an entrepreneur? And what advice do you have for anyone going into business, especially the jewelry business?
I feel like it's so hard just to pick one or two things. As cheesy as it may sound, to not give up. If you really, really want something and you love doing something and you're passionate about it, I promise you it will fall into place. You just have to put the work in. And I also can't stress enough with networking. And I know everyone always says that. And I know when I was in college, everyone told me that. And I didn't take it that seriously until I started doing my own thing and having my own business. The second I found some women's organizations that are centered around jewelry, everything kind of changed. They would answer my questions. They helped me find manufacturing. It's really hard to do it fully on your own. It can take a long time and it's a lot of work, but I really want to stress that people, you can do it.
You talked a moment ago about how you have such appreciation today for your body and all that it does for you and your feet and your legs and your hands and every part of it. And I imagine that's probably certainly a lesson that you've learned personally from that. So how are you today, Jacqueline, living your best life? What does that mean to you?
This past year, from when I was diagnosed, I have learned to be unapologetically me, because if I'm not, and I'm not taking care of myself, forget it. If I don't listen to my body, if I don't take downtime, if I don't do all the things that I need for myself, I can't give to others. And with that said, I have also learned this past year that as much rest as I've taken, as much days and weeks I've had to kind of just shut off, I've had the most successful year with my jewelry business. It grew substantially this past year, which I never thought was going to be possible with how sick I was and how much time I had to take off. So it does also show that if you're smart and you take care of yourself, just because you can't kind of do it all at once, it doesn't mean you can't do it.
I love that. It's so funny you should say that, because just this morning I was reading an email from the Calm app, which I get. And one of the lines in the app was so profound, which was simply, give yourself permission to rest. And we don't do that. Whether we're ill or whether we're fighting something, we don't give ourselves permission to just rest and to just be. So I'm so glad that you said that is one of the ways that you're living your best life. I love that. I want to let people know that sales, you talked about it, from your Hope collection of jewelry, go to Race to a Race MS. Race to a Race MS is dedicated to the treatment and ultimate cure of multiple sclerosis. We're going to have that special link for everyone in our show notes, as well as the other link, which you need to give me for your other collection. But people can check out all of your jewelry at JacquelineLapuk.com. JacquelineLapuk.com. And we'll have that for everyone there. Jacqueline, I'm so happy that you shared your journey with us today, and you're making such a difference in the lives of people who are diagnosed with MS and just out in the world in general. So thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really special. Thank you.
And to all of you listening today, know that no matter what life may throw at you, remember to appreciate all that you do have. And when you're able to do that and be grateful at the same time and give yourself permission to rest, you are on your way to living your best life. Until next time, be well.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Fast Twitch Media, helping people tell their stories and giving them worldwide reach. The future is in the cloud, and Fast Twitch Media can take you there. Be your best digital self. Check out fasttwitchmedia.space.